Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a special Tuesday edition of Movie Geeks United. My name is Jamie, and unfortunately, I'm all alone in today's endeavor. This was a very last-minute show that we added for a very special occasion, and my co-hosts, Jerry and Chris, they couldn't fit in into their regular schedule. But I'm with you today, and what's the special occasion? It is a press junket that Movie Geeks United has been invited to participate in from Fox Searchlight Pictures for the upcoming July 6 release of Joshua. It's a film that stars Sam Rockwell and Vera Farmiga. It's a psychological thriller. It has the overtones of Rosemary's Baby and The Shining, and it's a very exciting upcoming movie, and I know a lot of the listening audience out there are as excited about it as I am. We're expecting the director of the film to call in a few minutes to discuss the film with us. If you have any questions, you can always email them to us at moviegeeksunited@yahoo.com. And I would also urge people to email any ideas for questions for our upcoming Pacino show as well. This Sunday night, June 24th at 6 p.m. Eastern, we have a special two-hour edition of Movie Geeks United dedicated to the genius of Al Pacino, and we're all very excited about this. All three of us will be hosting the show with just a bunch of great, terrific guests, all collaborators, most of them collaborators of Mr. Pacino himself. The guest list so far that has been confirmed, we have Thomas Waits, who is an actor who co-starred with Mr. Pacino on Broadway in productions of Richard III in 1979 and American Buffalo in 1980 and 1982. And he also co-starred with Pacino in the film And Justice for All. He's also a very acclaimed acting teacher in New York City. We're very excited to have him on. He can speak to Pacino's career as a theater actor, because many people don't realize that that's his first love, and he continuously returns to the theater. It's amazing that he's one of the legends of the screen, and yet he keeps feeding that need to return to the theater. He's a true artist in that sense. We're very excited about this, Stephen Bauer, Pacino's co-star in the film Scarface. He played Manny, his best friend in the film. And actually, they were inseparable during the shooting. Pacino was in character the entire shoot and was, as a result, aloof to most of the other crew members. But his relationship with Bauer in the film kind of reflected his relationship in real life. Not that he shot him to death after seeing him sleep with his sister in real life, but that only happened in the film. But he really absorbed a lot of what Stephen Bauer had to offer, because Stephen Bauer is Cuban, and he just soaked up the whole lifestyle and frame of mind from Bauer, and they were a very invaluable relationship during the shooting of that film. So we can't wait to hear all about that. We also have William Scholl, the author of the films of Al Pacino, a very extensive assessment of every single film that litters Pacino's resume, and there's so many great films and great performances, and many of which are regularly overlooked for the more high-profile stuff. I'm thinking Sin of a Woman and Scarface and Godfather films. There's many very different, subtle, daring performances in his resume, like City Hall, like The Insider, like Scarecrow, the 1973 film that he did with Gene Hackman. Speaking of Scarecrow, here's another guest that we have for Sunday Night Show. His name is Jerry Schatzberg, and he is the director of The Panic in Needle Park and Scarecrow. He's also directed great films like Street Smart and the Gene Hackman film called Misunderstood. He's just a terrific director, one of the seminal directors of the 70s, I believe. And The Panic in Needle Park and Scarecrow were two of the first films. Actually, Panic was the first film that Pacino was featured in, starred in. So Jerry Schatzberg really exposed Pacino in a way that even before The Godfather came around that people had never seen. So we're very excited to have him on the show and ask him about how it came about that Pacino actually did Panic as his first film and the whole process, and plus the process of having him work opposite Gene Hackman, who is another one of our truly outstanding actors. I'm crazy about Gene Hackman, and the two of them together in Scarecrow, actually, it's an unbeatable combination, and it's the main reason why that film is a must-see. It's available now on DVD, as is Panic in Needle Park. It just was released last week or this week on DVD. They're both terrific movies, and oddly enough, there was some tension, apparently, on the set of Scarecrow, where Pacino and Hackman didn't necessarily mesh. You know, they both respect each other tremendously as artists. Pacino said on several occasions that Gene Hackman is actually his favorite actor, personally. And Hackman has said the same. But it was just they were at two different places in their lives, and the working relationship was rather strained, so I've read. But we'll straighten that out with Jerry Schatzberg on Sunday's show. And also, I'm keeping my cell phone on because the representative from Fox Searchlight might be calling to confirm this interview today. Also, we have on the show three actors from a film that Pacino is directing. It's many people don't know about this. It's his latest passion project. Actually, this week, there was a DVD box set released of three of Pacino's other passion projects. Looking for Richard, Chinese Coffee, and The Local Stigmatic. These were films that two of which Pacino directed and stars in, and The Local Stigmatic he spent years tinkering with, but I believe David Wheeler directed that particular film. But these are all three films, just very sharp insights into who Pacino is beyond the persona that we're used to. You know, we get to see his private passions at work. So I'd highly recommend picking up that box set. It's available starting today. But as I was saying, Pacino's latest directorial effort is called Sallow Maybe. It's based upon his experience performing a play that he's been obsessed with for, you know, 20, 30 years. He's performed it in a variety of different venues. And we have three of the actors from that film, Joe Rizzetto, Jeffrey Owens, and Steve Rogan. So they will be joining us, speaking from a point of view that shed some light on Pacino, the director, because that is a definite part of his art, and we are very excited to explore that. We also have on the show, hopefully, it's not 100% confirmed, but there is an upcoming film starring Al Pacino and Robert De Niro. It's a collaboration between the two of them, their first since Heat, which was actually their first film that they did together. They obviously were both in Godfather 2, but they shared no screen time. Heat, as you remember, they had one pivotal scene together in the diner. And that was basically it. But and The Heat is an incredible masterpiece. But this new film is called Righteous Kill. And apparently they are together through every minute of it. Play two detectives in search of a serial killer. It's written by the screenwriter who also wrote Inside Man. And it's directed by John Avnet, who directed Pacino's last, one of his last movies called 88 Minutes. This is an incredibly exciting movie. Any fan of Pacino, any fan of De Niro, any fan of acting or, you know, movies in general are very excited about this film. They start shooting in early September in Connecticut and New York City. And so far, details have been very sketchy about it. The only thing that anyone has said about it to the press is that it's De Niro, Pacino. They're in it throughout together. And it's about two detectives chasing a serial killer. So we almost have 100% confirmed a producer on that film who can shed some light and give us the inside scoop on that film. So we're beside ourselves about that, because this is a film that everyone's so looking forward to. So that's the guest list as it's shaping up right now. A very impressive show, a total of 10 guests for this coming Sunday night. So everybody, please tune in to it. It's going to be a great one. And like I said, submit your questions. Feel free to submit your questions to us at moviegeeksunited@yahoo.com. Speaking of Pacino, tonight will be the televised AFI tribute. He was honored by the AFI a couple of weeks ago, a Lifetime Achievement Award, the American Film Institute. It took place at the Kodak Theater. Really an all-star cast of collaborators and co-stars and filmmakers and even people that haven't worked with Pacino but whose lives were changed by Pacino will be attending and speaking in his honor tonight. That airs tonight on the USA Network at 9 o'clock. It's a two-hour special, and if you miss it at 9 o'clock, don't worry. You can catch a replay at midnight, and those are Eastern times, too. So great, great lineup of guests for Sunday night show, and please listen in. I want to talk to you a little bit about, we're going to conduct this interview as soon as our guest calls in, George Ratliff, to tell you a little bit about the press junket experience. Not that I've actually experienced a press junket before, but from what I understand, anyone that does not know what a press junket is, they choose a day normally 3 to 4 weeks before film's opening. And they it usually takes place in a hotel that they decorate with that particular movie's paraphernalia. And journalists from newspapers, television, radio, etc., come in one by one and from the early morning hours on and just flood the talent with a barrage of questions. And it's I can imagine it has to be very exhausting. But being asked the same questions over and over again for, you know, 8, 10 hours. But they, I think they do this on the East Coast and the West Coast to accommodate both both kinds of media on both sides of the states. But when you watch an Entertainment Tonight or an Access Hollywood or anything like that, those interviews are from the press junkets. So we're very thrilled to be a part of this. It was a very last-minute thing. They added us to our to their schedule. We had a 2:30 time, but apparently they're running a little bit over on that. It's bound to happen with so many press walking in and out of there and asking questions. So we'll just try to wait patiently and see if Mr. Ratcliffe calls us to talk about his new film, Joshua. Very thrilled about this movie because it's a psychological thriller that seems to be character and performance based. It's not blood and guts. It's a true psychological thriller, and you know, advanced reviews have been just stunning on it. I know that Variety and The Hollywood Reporter have already reviewed it, and it premiered at Sundance earlier this year to rave reviews. And I'm going to reiterate this later, but it won the was nominated for Best Independent Dramatic Feature at Sundance, and it actually won the Excellence in Cinematography Award at Sundance as well. A very impressive-looking film and great performances. So we're going to talk all about that. I guess while we're waiting for the call to come on, we can talk about some movie news, what's in the movie news over the past week and today. I don't know if anyone's heard about this, but apparently Michael Moore's Sicko has the pirating process has begun on Sicko. Apparently it has made its way onto YouTube, and it's finding an audience there. But Michael Moore doesn't seem to be so concerned about it. But he said that there was pirating involved in Fahrenheit too, because if you remember the buzz on Fahrenheit and the anticipation was just at a fever pitch, and some of that leaked out on the internet and on YouTube, etc. And he wasn't too concerned about it because it actually went on to gross $119 million domestically. I believe it's still the most profitable documentary ever made, or at least the highest grossing. And so while they believe that piracy will be the death of the film industry, apparently Michael Moore isn't too concerned about it. I'll read you a couple of more. No, actually, our guest has arrived, so let's conduct this interview. We're very excited about this. Let me tell you a little bit about the movie first. In director George Ratliff's new psychological thriller, Joshua, the world of an affluent Manhattan family is turned upside down when their increasingly disturbed son begins to act out against his newborn sibling. This intensely performed and gorgeously shot and directed film earned raves at this year's Sundance Film Festival, where it went on to earn a nomination for Best Independent Dramatic Feature and won the award for Excellence in Cinematography. Dwayne Burge of The Hollywood Reporter calls it a brilliant house of horror tale with Hitchcockian flair, and festival audiences have placed it among the ranks of Stanley Kubrick's The Shining and Roman Polanski's Rosemary's Baby. It is my pleasure to welcome to the show one of our most exciting young directors, Mr. George Ratliff. Mr. Ratliff, are you there?
Oh, my God. What an intro. Jesus.
Did I build it up for you enough? It's really an honor to have you on here.
Oh, thank you.
So many of us are so excited about this film because it seems like a smart, intelligent, character and performance-driven psychological thriller, and that's very rare these days.
Yeah, I feel like after all these slasher movies, it'd be fun to do something with a little more meat on its bones,
oh,
not
yeah.
off the bone. But yeah, this is the funny thing is that this movie is much more akin to like With a Friend Like Harry or Read My Lips or mm-hmm. Cachet or the Beat My Heart Skip, these sort of thrillers that are steeped in naturalism rather than, you know, supernatural.
Absolutely. Do you think that, I know you have a history in documentary filmmaking, and this is your, I believe, your second narrative film after Purgatory County?
That's right.
Did you take any tools from your documentary experience that proved useful in making Joshua?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I learned a lot from, especially from Hell House, which was, Hell House is more of a verite-styled film, sort of mm-hmm. a fly on the wall. But when you're doing a movie like that, you still, you know, you go into a scene, the scene has a beginning, middle, and end, and there are characters in it that have an arc, and you have to establish them and the geography of the place. And it's really like you're making a movie, but you're doing it, you know, on the spur of the moment. You know, you have to sort of write it and edit it as you're going, as the things are happening. And what that allowed, and then after you're editing the verite movie, you're sort of agonizing over those shots that you wish you had, or if you wish you knew that was going to happen, you could have, you know, gotten a different angle on that or something like that. And
right.
I found that making Joshua was kind of a luxury because I was able to storyboard intensely every shot of the movie and rehearse the actors, you know, in advance, and, you know, figure out every aspect of the movie beforehand on, you know, on the actual place where we'd be shooting it. And that allowed me to really make a very stylized movie, even though we had a very short amount of time to do it.
Right. But I would think, too, from the documentary experience that it would lend kind of the naturalism that you were talking
about. Well, absolutely. And that's something that's, you know, the funny thing is that when we made Hell House, it's we very specifically went for that look. And oddly enough, I would sit and watch movies like Husbands and Wives with my DP, like saying, this is what we're going for. This fake documentary that's supposed to look like a 70s documentary is what we're going for.
right.
Because, I mean, it also, that brings something to the viewing. Even, you know, like this imposed naturalism. And we achieved that in Joshua 2. But the funny thing about it is that the naturalism of the performance stays there the entire time, but the look of Joshua has a shift,
right?
And I'm very excited about that and what we achieved with our DP Benoit Deby.
I very much want to talk about the cinematography, but first of all, in conceiving the project, I know you co-wrote the script with David Gilbert.
That's right.
Did you want to craft a psychological thriller and then the idea came, or what inspired this?
This is all David's fault. He wanted to make an evil kid movie, and I really had no interest because I just started having kids myself, and I didn't want to wade into that pool, you know. Because when you start making a movie, you're kind of in the middle of it for a couple of years. And but because I didn't want to make it, I kept sort of thinking of reasons why this movie wouldn't work or be good, and we kept finding great solutions to every problem I presented, and they got to where we just both got so excited we had to write it.
Oh, wow.
But no, you know what? You know what? I mean, what interests me most about it is that I think it taps into a primal fear, and that is that, you know, you'll have a kid that is just bad, and it's not your fault. It's just he's just a bad kid. And I remember my brother when he first had his first son. I was so excited, and I was talking about like what all this kid could grow up to be, like, you know, a lawyer or a doctor. And he was driving and very solemnly said, "Yeah, but he could grow up to be a serial killer." And I thought, wow, God, yeah, he could, Jesus.
There's always that consideration. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But and I thought it's even scarier, the idea that there's no good reason for him to do it. And I think that people, when you're looking at an evil kid, you need some solution, like it's like he's possessed, or there's a ghost, or there's, you know, aliens or something like that. Like Village of the Damned was one of my favorite evil kid movie. But I thought the scariest possible thing is that he just is.
Right. But I would think that it would be very easy in terms of the performance to fall into the stereotypical Damien, that kind of thing. I know you got an exceptional child actor, Jacob Kogan?
Jacob Kogan, yeah.
Kogan.
You know, the real premise of Joshua is that he's a brilliant kid. He's a prodigy. But he, and that's a tough thing to cast, mm-hmm. because, you know, he is 9 after all. And we knew we found something with Jacob because Jacob is really that smart.
Wow.
and which was, you know, a little disconcerting in its own right. But the problem with Jacob was that he didn't play the piano.
Okay.
And so we were, you know, casting around for stunt double hands for the piano playing. But we thought we'd put Jacob in piano lessons to see if we got anywhere with that. And I actually took him to his piano lesson. It was his Juilliard piano teacher. And I brought this Beethoven sonata with me. And the piano teacher was like, "Oh, there's no way. This is one of the most complicated sonatas out there. And Beethoven's hands were huge. There's no way this boy could play." And I went to Jacob's house 2 weeks later to sort of keep going through the script because we were working on it together. And he sat down at the piano and played the sonata. And
oh, wow.
I was very frightened.
Mind blowing. Yeah. And I thought it was interesting too. Isn't the newborn in the film actually Jacob's own sibling?
Well, it's in the opening sequence. Kind of what happens is Joshua, his sister is born, and you see her sort of right during the first examination of mm-hmm. It's part of the title sequence. And you know, in movies, you notice that newborns are actually these three-month-old babies, sort of covered in goo or something, and
right.
They're all fat and huge. And this was an actual newborn. This was Jacob's baby brother, 3 days old, and his mother,
wow.
You know, let us film him. And it really was a huge gift to the film because, you know, part of the whole fear of the movie is your fear for this baby. And
right.
When you see an actual newborn, truly, and see how unprotected and helpless this, you know, baby is, it really sort of biologically does something to you as a viewer.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful sequence, too. And yeah, and then and Jacob as an actor had that, you know, that added thing of sibling sort of jealousy and rivalry of having a new baby.
So that
it was very real for him as an actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you have a sensational cast that you've assembled in this movie.
So. I don't know. I was so lucky, this cast, yeah.
Yeah, great. Sam Rockwell, Vera Farmiga, what do they bring to the table for you?
Well, you know, I was saying that the movie, it was very important for it to work, to be really steeped in a very true realism and a naturalism. And Sam and Vera are kind of rock stars in method acting, and they're really extremely respected within the acting community, especially because I think they're both incapable of doing something they just don't totally believe. I mean, every scene they did, we found a way for them to really believe it. And their performances are imbued with so many layers of characterizations that, you know, weren't in the script. They brought so much to it. You know, I'd like to say that Sam signed on just because he really loved me, but he liked me and he liked the script, but it was when I sort of dangled the possibility of Vera Farmiga that he really jumped at the chance to do the movie, and the same went for Vera. They just both wanted to work together,
mm-hmm.
and they both liked the project. But when they both heard of each other, they both jumped together.
Yeah,
and then we managed to get Celia Weston, who's amazing, and Dallas Roberts, who I'm a fan of, and Michael McKean.
Yeah,
it was an amazing cast, and they were all in New York. They're all New Yorkers or in New York at the time, so we had a great rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
Process too. We had a lot of time to rehearse and spent a lot of time rehearsing. They were all up for rehearsing.
How long was the rehearsal process?
Well, we had several weeks to do it, and it started quite early with Sam and Jacob because that was pretty important. And they had a great first meeting, you know, because kind of the backbone of the movie is the father-son relationship, you know,
yeah.
That turns into kind of a chess match.
Right. You know, I know too with the strength of the performances, you know, when you're building suspense, how important is it? Is it the most important thing to invest in your characters to make that believable and effective, more so than the pyrotechnics or any of the bells and whistles?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the plot comes from character, and character comes from plot, and the characters really. And there's so much you can have in a script, but they put so much. They imbue it with so much more in the performance. And you know, I mean, a lot of the movie, you empathize and go along the line with Sam Rockwell's character, Brad, and. And one of the advantages of Sam is that I think it's impossible not to like Sam. And so you're on this ride with Sam the entire movie, and you go down the entire path with him, and it's a hard, intense, frightening path that we take in the movie.
Yeah. And I would think that I've always wondered about this. When you're producing a film that is that intense, what kind of tone do you try to keep on the set?
You know, it was I have to say, it was a fun set. It was a fun movie. And the thing that no one expects, and that the producers, I kept telling the producers that this movie is actually going to be funny, and they never
believed
it.
Very dark comic, yeah.
And it's very funny. And it was, and it's funny in an interesting way, and it sort of plays in the relationship between anxiety and laughter, which I think is very interesting. And they feed on each other. And but no, it was the set was great. Everyone really got along. It was kind of a charmed experience, and I hate to sound stupid, but I had a great time, and I don't regret anything in this movie. And
yeah.
I had heard so many horror stories, but it went really well. And
yeah,
the producers wanted to make the same movie I did, and it was just lucky.
I know most people think that you know, if you're making a film that intense and kind of tightly wound, that the set has to be a nightmare, but actually I've heard from a lot of directors that, you know, it's important to keep a kind of a levity on the set to kind of offset that.
Yeah, well, you know, everyone works differently, but we had a really nice time.
Yeah, stylistically, we were talking about the cinematography a little bit ago. What were you trying to achieve?
Well, I think I threw out some movies that I really... liked and were a big influence on this, like and they were mostly French or European films, and there's a coldness to them that I think is amazing. But what we did on Joshua is that the movie sort of degrades as the look of the film degrades, sort of as Brad's character sort of unravels, and the movie begins, it's sort of cool in tone, but it's long lenses so people look nice, and it's kind of a smooth handheld where it's kind of a living frame. And but as the movie progresses and Joshua takes over, the angle gets lower and lower, and the lenses get wider and wider, and so it gets and the moves become no more handheld but more precise or locked down. And so a feeling sort of takes over the look of the movie, but also... we employ a bleach bypass that's progressive. And
oh, really?
What a bleach bypass is basically you skip one of the baths and the fixers of the actual film print.
Mm-hmm.
And what that creates is a less saturated and more contrasty look, a starker look.
Absolutely.
And so Reel 1 we did nothing to. Reels 2, 3, and 4 we did a half of a skip bleach bypass, so it's a bit less saturated, a bit more contrasty. And Reels 5 and 6, we did a full skip. So if you looked at the beginning and end of the movie, they look like totally different films. But as you're watching it, it's such a subtle thing that comes upon the movie, you don't notice that it's happening.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And so the look of the film goes through the same sort of, it breaks down the same way that Brad's character does.
Oh, goodness, that's great.
No, I'm very excited. And it opens up July 6 here in New York and in L.A.
And then it will have a rollout.
And then, yeah, it platforms out from there.
Before I let you go, I just have one more question. I can't let you go without hearing about your Sundance experience. I know.
Well, you know, I'd never been to Sundance. And it was, I didn't know what to expect. And it kind of, I had a fantastic time. I was very nervous and it was very nerve-wracking. And I, but we... You know, we sold our movie to Fox Searchlight on the second day we were there.
Wow.
And it was, and that was kind of the my big hope, it was that company. And so I from that point on, I had nothing but fun.
Wow.
It was very relaxing. I got to see a lot of movies, and it was great. It was great.
Well, fantastic. We're all looking very forward to this film. July 6th, it comes out.
That's right.
In limited release. Thank you so much for
joining
us.
Thank you for having me.
It's been great having you. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
George Ratliff, the director of the upcoming film Joshua. That's it for today's show. Thanks so much for joining us, everyone out there who's listening. And we'll see you Sunday night for the Pacino tribute. Thank everyone so much for listening today. Bye-bye.